Hi, I'm Norm Shealy. NormShealy.com. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Thanks for being with us tonight. Tonight I have with us Dr. Jim Roach, America's Healer, and we're going to talk about his new book, God's House Call. This book is fresh off the print. To be honest, I haven't even gotten to read the whole thing yet, but I've looked over the draft of it, and I love it. It's such a sweet book, and it's such a reinforcing book for the human spirit. So welcome, Dr. Jim Roach, and thanks for taking the time to come on my show.
Oh, it's great to be back on your show, Eva. My pleasure.
You know, just for my listening audience, normally when I have Jim on the show, we talk about alternative medicine and MTHFR and methylation problems. But tonight, we have the surprise of getting Jim's new personal book. So tell us a little bit about you before we get started, Jim. And
sure.
What are you doing? Where can people find you? Tell us where your new book is.
I'm in the center of the universe, Midway, Kentucky. We have 1,500 people. But Eva, despite that, I feel like I'm one of the world's leading integrative experts with expertise in botanical, integrative, holistic, and nutritional medicine particularly. And I've spoken all around the country, I've done international education, national consultant, I've spoken at Mayo Clinic last October. I have my own conference that I put together. We had practitioners from around the country, 10 states represented, from West Wisconsin to Texas to California to New Jersey. So those are some of the things that I'm involved with. But, yeah, I love what I do.
Well, I tell you what, they're lucky to have you up there.
Thank you.
Because I've spent hours interviewing, and I know that you do a good job at knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell us about this new book, God's House Calls.
Well, you know, and I started writing a different book on brain health, and I don't know if we may have talked about that, but actually I had a spiritual guide show up in my life, and that was kind of a strange thing to happen. You know, that never happened to me before. It was last April, and, you know, I was planning my first conference for practitioners, but you know, I was coached to charge four times more than what I thought I was worth, because, you know, you tend to undervalue yourself. And so this was mid-April, and the conference tentatively scheduled for mid-May, and I only had two people sign up, and I had not announced where it was going to be. I knew in my head where it was going to be, but I hadn't announced. And then I had someone show up in my life. She came as a patient, and then for a follow-up visit, she showed up unexpectedly and wanted to be insisted on being seen, and my wife recognized, even though we didn't have time, that we needed to work her in. So we did. And she'd had something happen. She lived in Arizona, and she had this image of the word Ashland and also college on a hill. And it was a compelling message. She had to find the answer to that puzzle. She traveled to Ashland, Oregon. No answers there. And then she and her husband moved to Central Kentucky. And she came to visit our office, and there was a college on a hill on the edge of her town. And she did a YouTube search, found me giving a testimonial for Madeira Foundation, Ashland, Oregon, and figured out I was who connected the dots. So when I walked in the room, she said, "You're probably going to think I'm crazy, but you know, I've got an important message for you." And she took my index finger, then my middle finger, then fourth finger, and then back to the middle finger. And she said, "The message is, this event you're having at Midway College in the middle of next month is supposed to happen." That was her profound message for me, except I hadn't announced where it was going to be. You know, so, you know, it was in my mind where it was going to be, but she had no idea for me, communications, where it was going to be. So, and she then went forward to say, "You've been kind of like in a circle of age. You need to break out. You're supposed to be a leader, and your time has come to get started with that." And I mentioned I was thinking about writing a book on spirituality, and she said, "Oh, that's written in stone, but that's going to happen." So,
well, this certainly happened in a whirlwind, because I can remember talking to you, in the fall? And you were just talking about this? It's like really
a
whirlwind.
Well, and actually, so I'd emailed emailing someone and mentioning about these, I was thinking about writing a book, and the person emailed back and said, well, I want to publish that. I've learned enough to know if somebody wants to publish your work, you go for it. So I said, sure, let's do that. And that was early August, and you know, I already accumulated over 100 stories at that point. I find, the second question I ask patients is, what's your vision? What are your passions? And some people just look at you perplexed, saying, what are you asking? But other people respond, God and family. And if, half the time when I have a serene, upbeat patient who comes in, half the time they've had a spiritual experience. But they may not have shared it with anyone. They may not have told their spouse. They don't want to be ridiculed. They don't want to be sent to a psychiatrist or to a mental institution. Lily Tomlin says, when people speak to God, they call it prayer, but when God speaks to people, they call it schizophrenia. And if so, I've got hundreds of schizophrenic patients because God speaks to a lot of my patients. And I had no idea. I was, went to medical school, and I was always Christian, religious, but I always wondered, well, how is God possible? And so, three or four years ago, it was kind of the place, well, I'd like to believe there's a God. I won't know until I die, but I'd like to believe that. But now, after, hundreds of stories later, absolutely, there's no question. And understanding quantum theory, knowing how it's possible. And so now I'm really seeking to destigmatize spiritual experiences. These are so common. Probably 20% of the population has had these experiences, but have not shared it. But imagine.
Oh, I bet it's more than that.
Yeah, it may be more than that. So imagine if everyone shared these with each other, how that could transform the world.
A few years ago, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. We have a slight lag, so I thought you had stopped. But a few years ago, Noetic Sciences did a study, and I don't remember, I can't remember if it was for 10 years or for 30 years that they did the study, but whatever the number was. They found that in the early to mid-90s, more people had documented spiritual epiphanies than ever before in the history of time. And I think the key here is documented. But did you find that there was a particular time period when there were more, a whole big shebang of these things? Just curious.
Well, to be honest, Eva, I wasn't asking the right questions until a couple of years ago. So, this is all brand new to me, but, I have the sense that you do that, change is happening.
I wouldn't have brought this up, but because you did, and you opened the door, so now I'm going to ask the question. I was not going to talk about religion because I don't typically do that, but you brought it up.
Right.
So, you said that you were a Christian, and then a few seconds later you said, you wonder if the God was really there, if there really was a God. So what was your problem? And I don't want to get into religion because that will cause people a fight, but I want to know, what was your hurdle? Was it the invisibility? Or what was it? And how did it help you go through that door? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing was, having a full grasp of the quantum theory and the impact that has. How is it possible? And, understanding, for example, Einstein's notation of spooky behavior, how when a particle separates into two and they're on opposite sides of the universe, anything that impacts one particle instantaneously impacts the other particle, the other side of the universe. So, having a sense about, how it's possible for these things to happen was certainly one of the hurdles. And
so, but were you in your religion? And I grew up as a Baptist, so I'm not picking at you here. I grew up as a Baptist, and then later I, too, could not find what I was looking for in my religion. I converted to a conservative Jew, and now I'm nothing but spiritual. So I'm just trying to ask someone else, why wasn't your religion sufficient?
Well, my honest opinion is that I'm not sure how many people who attend church really believe what they hear in church or really believe the Bible or think that they think the Bible is metaphorical. That's what I believed three or four years ago. I thought, these are just metaphors. But what my patients have shared with me, again, through hundreds of stories, I realize, listen, these aren't metaphors at all. These are actual, you know, true spiritual psychic experiences that are occurring. And actually, you know, I was very fortunate with my church that they allowed me to have a Sunday school class, which I think is a rare thing, on near-death experiences as a window to understanding God in the afterlife. 60 people come to church. We had 80 people, as many as 80 on two occasions, show up at the Sunday school class. And what we found out is that a lot of people that come to church have had spiritual experiences.
When they open
up about that, then all of a sudden others had an aha moment. You mean this is real?
Uh-huh.
What we're, you know, learning at church, this is actually happening. And the church has transformed. It's so much stronger now than it was before. There's so much energy.
I have to say this. You know, this kind of spiritual epiphany, in my perspective, I've had something that was kind of like that in my life. And in my perspective, it's the goal of the soul to have these experiences. But so many religions, as soon as you have them, they want to say you're crazy when really it's what they're striving for all along and they don't realize it.
That's right.
So it's a wonderful thing that, you know, giving the people what they're thirsty for there. It's a wonderful thing. Good job. So tell us some of the stories. Pick out some of your favorites and tell me.
Well, first of all, the first story was a patient who was in a car accident, and she just had a near-death experience, saw the light and felt the love, and afterwards she said, I'm not afraid of death anymore. And I thought, what do you mean? Everyone's afraid of death. What do you mean you're not afraid of death? Here I'm valiantly trained to do everything I can to save people's lives. And here she's saying, well, it doesn't matter if I die. And I thought, well, actually, that's kind of a nice thing. What if I didn't fear death, could go every day without fearing death? And then after I pondered that for a while, I thought, what if I could teach my patients not to fear death anymore? And for example, with cancer patients, when I get a new cancer patient, I tell them, you know, if you've made the world a better place, you know, the downside of, you know, if everything goes wrong, the downside is you're going to end up in ultimate bliss. So, you know, that puts the cancer patient at ease, you know, about that. And
absolutely.
On the other hand, if they haven't done things quite right, because I had another patient who, he was an alcoholic, and he had a near-death experience, and it was a negative near-death experience. And he didn't share any of the details, but whatever it was, it shook him up. And so he, you know, two kids he'd abandoned, he set up trust funds, he did everything he could over the next 2 years to make amends. And then he had another death experience, and this time it was blissful.
So, really?
Yeah.
The same man had two experiences?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? The same man had two experiences?
Absolutely. And
wow.
And
how did that happen?
Well, he had severe infections. He was in and out of ICU. And so I don't know exactly. I think he was just in ICU and when the first and really and probably the second one as well occurred. But, and, you know, Sam Parnia, Dr. Parnia up at in New York, the resuscitation specialist who has written the book Erasing Death, notes that individuals who attempt suicide, most of them had negative near-death experiences. But out of the patients in my office, yeah, I've had 36 altogether at the moment that have had near-death experiences. You know, that's the only one that reports a negative near-death experience. Of course, not everyone who goes unconscious into a coma has a near-death experience. Only maybe 20% recall that. So what happens to those other 80%? And that, you know, was another revelation to me that, you know, there are a lot of entities, you know, traveling the earth that haven't transitioned to the other side. And so, you know, hearing, learning stories. And one of the best stories there, Eva, is about Paul Decker. So I was talking with a woman who's an Ivy League woman, and she said that a few weeks after Paul Decker, he's Fast and Furious, a popular series, a popular star, and a few weeks after his tragic death, he showed up in her brain, and he was very distraught because he would go home and no one seems to notice him. He went to work, and it was like he wasn't there. And he was just so frustrated, didn't know what to do. But she recognized what was going on and took, you know, went to a medium 2 weeks later that helped him transition to the other side. And now he appears in her brain again, but this time with grateful messages for what she did for him.
Wow. So do you think that near-death experiences are positive or negative? Well, I won't ask you did you think that, because it really doesn't matter what we think. Do you have an opinion from your patient experiences? Is it, do you think it might could be because of their perspective in life, you know, how they've been living their life? Because that's very interesting. That man had a negative one and a positive one, and the positive one was after he changed his behavior. So do you believe it has something to do with perspective, you know, how you view the world or not?
Well,
how you view your life and right. where you stand?
Right. You know, I'm still struggling with that issue, but I think one of two things, and based on the patient stories that I've heard, one of them is, you know, maybe he just had a very negative life review. As you know, life reviews are very common at the time of near-death experiences, and you know, everything flashes through your mind at that time, and maybe over just a matter of seconds, right? Everything you did, good and bad, your whole life is reviewed, and that can occur in seconds because, you know, it's a different time interval when you're looking at that there. So if you did a lot of negative things in life, then maybe that was the cause of the negative experience. But, you know, I wonder about other possibilities too, because, you know, I had one patient who, as part of her near-death experience, was placed in a bubble by an angel and was given a tour of hell. That's what she reported, and she went to, you know, looked like people in jails and, you know, gnashing of teeth and so forth. And so, and then I had another patient who had the experience of she visualized people in what she called hell, and she started praying for them, and then she says God came to her and said, don't pray for those people. You know, they've determined their own destiny, and it's not appropriate to pray for them. I've had two individuals that have had experienced, quote-unquote, the valley of death.
What does that mean?
So, you know, in the Bible, you know, there's reference to the valley of death.
Valley of death. I thought you said violate death. Okay.
Valley, L-L-E-Y. Okay. Of death. And so one of them was in a near-death experience and had someone escorting them as they kind of, in essence, were kind of flying over the valley of death. Looked down, there was a lot of mud, the bones sticking of the mud, and he said, get me out of here. I don't want to spend time in this area. And then went on and ended up in an area of like paradise.
So did their religion, whatever they believed, whatever their religious or their spiritual beliefs seem to be indicative of what their near-death experiences were like?
Well certainly there's a great deal of influence in that direction. For example, I was called on an emergency to see one of my patients who lived about a mile away. I went over, was doing CPR on her, then she was floating up near the ceiling, watching everything and heard everything that went on, and then the ceiling seemed to open up. She rose a little higher, could see people gathering outside her door, saw someone walking down the street, saw the ambulance a half mile away, heard the conversation in the ambulance a half mile away, and then there was a tiny light in the sky, and whoosh, she was on the other side. And she was met at the pearly gate by Jesus, and she said it was the most pearly of pearly colors that you can imagine. And she entered and asked to see Moses and asked to see Joseph and got to meet them. And I said, you know, is it flat there? And she said, no, kind of rolling hills and streams, and there are animals there. And there were millions of angels, and she could hear God's voice booming in the background. And then finally Jesus said, well, it's not your time. And she started crying. And, of course, that's another common theme. You know, most of my patients will get mad. You know, they don't want to come back. They're in bliss. Why would they want to come back? So Jesus explained that they were praying for her and she needed to come back. So, whoosh, she was back down in body. But right, the way I look at it, Eva, is, you know, I've read something called the Aquarian Gospel, which I personally have found very revealing. It's kind of the time between Jesus who was in his youth and then he started his ministry in Galilee. So this book talks about him traveling to Tibet and to India and getting, you know, education from the wise masters in those areas before he started his ministry. And then at the time of his resurrection, he once again visited those same individuals, like the three wise men. He reportedly went back and visited. As I read this Aquarian gospel, every word, every line resonated with truth. You know, I always, when I'm reading something, I want to see how I react to mm-hmm. what I'm reading. And this really resonated strongly. And at the end of the Aquarian gospel, it says, you know, Jesus can appear in any form that he chooses to. And so that's one way I think about that. You know, I think Jesus is a common theme in all these stories, not in every story for sure, but certainly a very common theme. And obviously those words, you know, it's not your time, are very common words that are mm-hmm. utilized. But one story, for example, I was talking with someone who's one of the co-founders of the Institute of Functional Medicine, so a very bright individual, and this individual says when she was a five-year-old girl that they were playing this game. They were building a house next door, and they just put a refrigerator in there. So the kids were playing a game. Who could stay in the refrigerator the longest? Well, by the time her turn came up, they put her in the refrigerator. Then a parade showed up out front. All the kids rushed out to watch the parade, and she was stuck in the refrigerator.
Oh, my God.
And so, you know, it was cold, it was dark, and, you know, she's getting frightened. And it went on, and then finally the door opened. But, you know, who opened the door? It was a leprechaun. Well, what's, you know, if a tall man in, you know, long hair and a flowing robe opened the door, that might have frightened her, right? So a leprechaun is something, is a way for her to, you know, comfortably, gently be greeted coming out of that frightening situation. One of the things I find is that consciousness or God, however, whatever word you choose, very, very creative and a lot of personality. And I hadn't obviously appreciated that before. One of my favorite stories is my mentor, Dr. Dwight McKee. You know, he was perhaps the top integrative oncologist in the country before he retired last year. And Dwight's the smartest man I've ever met. And he lives out in La Jolla, California. And he, you know, started out in integrative medicine and had figured out how to succeed. He had a lymphoma patient in stage, and he reversed that end-stage lymphoma. And then the daughter of that patient developed lymphoma at an even more advanced stage, but unfortunately she died from side effects from chemotherapy. Well, he was very dejected and then went home, went to bed, and then got up during the night to go to the bathroom, went back in bed. And, you know, he'd been thinking a little bit about, you know, being a hematologist, oncologist, but he'd never given it serious thought. But all of a sudden he hears a voice, and the voice says, "You were to bring compassion back to the hospitals." And he kind of knew what that meant, and he asked, well, for how long? And said, 4 years. And then he said, "Who are you?" Then a giant party favor, like 6 feet long, drops down from the ceiling with a lot of energy on the end of that. So here Dwight is on the bed, kind of trembling. He says, okay. And then, whoosh, that goes back into the ceiling. So, you know, how God or consciousness expresses itself is highly variable. And again, a lot of personality. I think it's supposed to be mystical. I think, you know, it's supposed to be a giant puzzle. You know, I don't think there's any way that we can figure out all these answers, but we're constantly making progress.
Well, I have a question for you now.
Okay.
As someone that, and this wasn't what I was planning to do, but I have to do it now. As someone that's, because I've been there, as someone that's coming from a fundamental background,
yeah,
who's now stepped through the door of conscious awareness like this,
mm-hmm.
do you believe that it matters what religion you are when you die in order to have, I won't say go to heaven because some people believe it differently, but have bliss,
no,
whatever that means to you?
Right. No, I think what matters is, you know, have you made the world a better place? Is the message I'm getting. Have you made the world a better place? And so, you know, I think, you know, you can get to quote-unquote heaven via any religion, and I think you don't need religion to get to heaven. I think, you know, spirituality is all you really need. I think you need to recognize that the existence of consciousness. I think another thing, Eva, too, is the sense I get that it's essential for us to forgive.
Okay.
Forgive ourselves 100%, to forgive others 100%. You know, and that's kind of a Jesus perspective in terms of, you know, people in the Christian religion. When Jesus died on the cross at Easter, you know, that was for forgiveness of sins. So I do sense that, you know, if we don't forgive others, that's going to compromise us. Now, what I don't understand is, you know, is there, you know, truly a hell per se or not, or is it just everyone has life stages, you know, stages they have to go through in terms of reincarnations? You know, so if you don't make much progress in this lifetime, you're going to have to, you know, keep doing more and more lifetimes to make progress. And certainly, you know, I've encountered some experiences in terms of reincarnation. And you know, and what was it, 250 A.D. that Constantine said, well, if you believe in reincarnation, we're going to slit your throat and take all your property. So, you know, I think in the Bible that there were books that talked about reincarnation, but they were removed at that time. So I think it was part of fundamental Christianity that reincarnation existed and was accepted. So, you know, it may be just simply that we all have different stages that we're supposed to evolve to in our life, but, you know, some of us evolve better than others, and we keep have to go, you know, life after life until we get it right, right?
So your patients that had these experiences, after the experiences, what was their message?
Well, first of all, it's not a matter of faith after those messages. It's a matter of knowing. So no longer do they think, well, golly, I feel pretty strongly that there's a God or that there's a consciousness. No, it's that, you know, I know that there is now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a revelation to me as well, of this knowing. Now that's not everyone, because some wonder to themselves, you know, am I crazy? You know, haven't heard of other people having these stories. Is there something wrong with me, right, with those stories? But what I find is that these stories always have a positive impact on the patients that experience them. And that's how you can tell, to me, whether it's a real spiritual experience as opposed to, say, a psychiatric breakdown. You know, if after having the spiritual experience, if you are filled with hate or filled with negativity, guess what? It wasn't a spiritual experience. It's, you know, something entirely different. But, you know, all my patients that have had these experiences have a positive feeling after those.
So how long, I won't say how many because I know that, or maybe you do, how many or how long did it take before you were convinced that, or before you knew that something was going on here?
Well,
did you believe it the first one, or did you believe it before and just needed confirmation? I mean, what clued you in that something was happening?
Well, you know, and actually, you know, my grandfather had a friend who was in a car accident, and his secretary was following him in the car right after that, and she stopped, and he'd been thrown out of the car through the windshield, was on in the gutter on the side of the road, and she was unconscious, and she slapped him and said, "Wake up, wake up!" And then he woke up and said, "Why did you do that?" You know, he was very mad for being taken out of his near-death state. So I kind of had heard that story, and then with my first patient. But I think one of the things that has convinced me as much as anything is the out-of-body experiences. You know, virtually every week I talk with someone who's been out of body. And these are so, so common that they occur in the descriptions of these experiences. You know, there's no way this is something that's happening in someone's head. You know, it's just simply not possible with the way these have been described to me. So once I recognize that these are common and, you know, they're happening, and you better have an explanation for why they're happening, but there's no question they are, in fact, happening. Those happen during childbirth. They happen during sexual assault, happen during surgery. They can happen in childhood. You know, I had one patient, when he won the Kentucky Derby, he was in the winner's circle, and whoosh, he was suddenly up above looking at himself down below. So in his case, it was joy. But, you know, recognizing these out-of-body experiences are so common, that may have been the moment that listen, you know, these things are happening, and I just need to go with this now. I think at that point I had 100% conviction.
Wow. Do you know Eldon Taylor by any chance?
I don't, no.
Sometime I should introduce you to him. Eldon has a New York Times bestseller book, a couple of them, I think. And
good.
when he was young, he and his, I don't remember if it was his wife or his girlfriend, but I think it was his girlfriend at the time. I mean, he was like in his 20s or something.
Yeah.
He was in a car, and the car broke down on a railroad track. And mm-hmm. a train came along, and it was dark late at night. And this train hit that car and tore it to shreds.
Mm-hmm.
And Eldon ended up, I don't know, I think it's been a long time since he told me the story, but like 200 feet away. With not a scratch on him, and the car was completely torn up. He doesn't
depends
know
on whether
how he
it's
got,
your time or not, Eva. You know,
he doesn't know how
time.
He got. Yeah, he doesn't know how he got out of that car.
Yeah.
And he was not. He wasn't knocked out or anything. He was
right.
just suddenly standing about 200 feet or whatever the distance was from that car.
Right.
And the train was dragging the car down the track. Yeah. You know, how'd he get out?
Right. Yeah. And, you know. When it's not your time, it's not your time. And, you know, if you've, you know, particularly in my experience, if you're a very spiritual individual, you know, you have a mission to perform, then in certain scenarios, you're given, you know, additional opportunity to occur. And certainly I've heard, you know, a number of stories kind of tied in with that. Of course, remember that story that was recently in the headlines, what, about a month ago or less, about the car that overturned in the river in Colorado. And the mother died instantly, but the baby was upside down in the car seat. Remember seeing that story?
Yeah.
And it was, the water was icy cold, and the rescuers, you know, trying to wade through the river to get to the baby, you know, had to be treated for hypothermia. And when they, you know, got, you know, they claimed they heard a voice. At least two of them heard a voice saying, you know, hurry, hurry, come on into the car. But when they got in, you know, clearly she'd been dead for a long time. So then they get in and rescue this baby, and when they pull it out, the baby's not breathing. It's like that baby right at that specific moment died, and if they'd not got in there right at that moment. So somehow that spirit seemed to keep that baby alive until it could be rescued. I had a real interesting story just a few days ago, someone who worked in the emergency room, and for decades he'd worked in the emergency department, involved in a lot of CPRs, resuscitations, and he says, you know, at least 8, if not 10 times, you know, while he's doing CPR, he would feel the hairs on the back of his neck rise. He would have, sometimes he would feel a tap on his shoulder. And it was like, you know, he definitely got the sense, you know, that these spirits were saying, listen, I don't want, you know, let me loose. I'm ready to move on to, you know, to the light, to the bliss. Don't keep me here. So they literally, he felt tapping on his shoulder, at least on two occasions. So
this is kind of off a little bit, but it just crossed my mind. I'm curious. Do you think that it's ever possible when someone dies and leaves their body that some other soul can come in that body?
Yeah, interesting question, because I actually heard a story right down that alley. I was talking with a psychiatrist, and she said that she had a patient who had attempted suicide and was out of body, you know, after the attempted suicide. And yes, another entity entered her body while she was out of body. And then she decided, well, I don't want to die after all. I want to come back. But her body was occupied by this other entity.
So how did they know? How'd they know something else entered it?
Well, because there was a different personality. This
The
personality of the new entity was much more blasé. You know, a very kind of monotone voice and didn't have much energy and so forth. And I guess she'd had some experience in this area, perhaps, but. Her approach was to contact her deceased father and also to contact an archangel to work out a game plan for getting this entity back out of the body. And the first attempt failed, But then on the second attempt, because they kept telling the entity, go to the light, go to the light. And the entity would say, why? Why should I go to the light? But finally they convinced the entity to go to the light, and the entity left, and she was allowed to re-enter her body.
So what was that? Was she allowed to re-enter, or were they both in the same body at the same time?
She was out of body, and it was not. And another case, not quite like that, but a case of sexual assault where a woman left the body. She didn't. It took months to convince her to go back in body after she'd left body because of the trauma of the sexual encounter. Mm-hmm. So,
what do you think about? I know someone that was sexually assaulted and had a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
And I believe, because I knew this person really well, I believe this person's soul split. And if I don't want to take up your interview with this whole story, but what do you think? Do you think that's a possibility? Somehow the soul splits off?
And I used to love it. I've learned now that the God or consciousness is too big. We can never understand. So I don't rule much out anymore. So could that happen? I think it's possible that something like that could happen. I wouldn't rule it out. I haven't heard those stories, but every week just about I'm hearing a new story with a new wrinkle, with new insight. So interesting idea.
Well, this particular person had a really bad trauma, and I'll just tell you, it was my daughter, because we've been on the radio and we've talked about it. She had a violent rape, and she actually died, and when we brought her back to life, and she was in the ER, in the hospital, and she kept complaining, and she'd say, Mom, after she was on a ventilator for 3 days, and when she woke up, she would go, Mom, there's a dead girl hanging from my ceiling. Please make her go away. And for weeks, she would say that. For months after she came home, she would say that.
Okay.
So one night we were sitting out on the patio, and I'm intuitive, whatever you want to call it, sensitive, whatever you want to call it, I'm that thing. So we were sitting there in the dark, and she went, Mom, that dead girl is here. Please make her go away. So I kind of just closed my eyes And I said, well, what does she look like, Jessica? And she said, just a minute, and it's pitch black outside. We're sitting outside, and she went, Mom, it looks like me, but I'm rotten. So I kind of went into my head, and I said, Jessica, and she goes, Mom, I'm so scared. It's so dark here, and I can't see anything, and there's nobody here but me. So I said, I'm thinking this in my head, and my daughter, she can't hear it because she's sitting beside me. But
right.
I said, look around and see if you see a light, and she about a minute later, she said, I see a pinpoint of a light very far away. Yep. And I said, pick your feet up and float to that light. She said, I can't, Mom. I'm stuck. I said, Jessica, pick your feet up and think that you're floating to the light. So all this is going on in my head.
Yep.
She said, okay, I'm floating. I'm floating. Oh, Mom. It's faster and faster, and all of a sudden she went, oh, Mom, it feels so good. And at that exact same time that broken person said that, my daughter, who was sitting beside me, said, Mom, the dead girl just disappeared. And that's been four or five years ago, and the dead girl, she's never complained again about the girl hanging from the ceiling, that means.
Yeah, right. With out-of-body experiences, for example, someone in my office went out-of-body, and, she could watch herself speaking and talking and behaving, roughly normally. So, even when you're out-of-body, your physical energy spirit continues. So it makes me wonder that, if the physical energy spirit was still present, but the actual true spirit was separate. And so, was reunited. Because, when you're out of body, your normal physical body continues to function.
You know what? You will probably understand this. Other people would probably think that's crazy for saying this, but you'll probably get it. I think about stuff a lot, you know that.
Yeah.
And I know that a long time ago, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, when I was severely under methylating, is when my spiritual epiphany happened. Maybe 10 years, I don't know, whenever it was.
Yeah.
When I was severely under methylating is when I could channel the best.
Uh-huh.
It's when I had very clear dialogue. I would imagine somebody else would think that it was schizophrenia.
Yeah.
You know? I really would. After I got on my nutritional protocol, after my heart attack, actually, and I got on this rigid diet and rigid protocol with very high daily dosages of B vitamins, it went away. I can still do it at will. I can still, you know, do my medical intuitive just as well as I always did. But it doesn't bombard me. It's not a constant flow stream of information. So my point here is I really think that perhaps methylation is the glue that holds, or at least the key to the glue that holds the soul into the body.
And you know what that mechanism may partly be related to is estrogen dominance. You know, it's my intuitive patients tend to be the ones that have the highest, I sense, the highest estrogen levels. So I think, you know, the amount of estrogen directly influences your ability to have these types of experiences. For example, you know, when you're estrogen dominant, which means you're under methylate because you're not getting rid of estrogen metabolites readily, right? So your estrogen builds up in your system. And those individuals, you know, particularly after spiritual experiences, become very sensitive. You know, what are the PMS symptoms? Anxiety, panic, obsessiveness, phobia, sleep disturbance. You know, become OCD. You cross the T's, you dot the I's. You know, those are the estrogen dominant individuals. And those, and particularly after the spiritual experiences, they often, you know, become very sensitive to negative energy. You know, they have to be, really watchful about negative energy. And so, yeah, that's my theory, is that somehow estrogen allows you to be more sensitive and be more open to spiritual experience, and then methylation, by helping to get rid of excess estrogen, may diminish those abilities, perhaps.
That's interesting. Now, is there a connection between niacin and estrogen? Because, you know, Abraham Hoffer would always say, we can cure schizophrenia with niacin. So is there... Is there some kind of connection that could be had there, just out of curiosity?
You know, I think every vitamin has some hormonal influence. To be honest, with vitamin B3, I'm not aware of a specific hormonal connection, but yet I know that it has. They all have some hormonal influence. I know vitamin B2 helps modulate hormones, increases testosterone.
Which one is that, B2? What is that?
That's thiamine.
Okay.
Yeah, it helps, riboflavin. Helps do it. For example, 400 milligrams of riboflavin helps prevent migraines, right? And I think that's because it blocks aromatase and 5-alpha reductase, just like zinc does, and increases testosterone, which is anti-inflammatory, and then reduces estrogen and the dihydrotestosterone, which promotes, you know, those excess male symptoms. So vitamin B3, the NADH, which is an activated form, supports mitochondrial function, helps cells work more efficiently, so maybe that is a mechanism for getting rid of excess estrogen.
Interesting. So would it matter, do you believe, if here we go again on our supplements, whether it's the synthetic or the regular riboflavin or riboflavin 5-phosphate?
Well, yeah, you always want to, I say always, but you know, generally you want to get the activated forms of that. Yeah, and there's a phosphate form of riboflavin that's the preferred form, generally speaking, unless, you know, if you have a CBS mutation, then maybe it's not so preferred until you address that CBS issue. But
what would it do if you had CBS?
Well, it promotes methylation. So if you haven't taken care of the CBS issues and, you know, in the process of methylation, you end up converting more homocysteine to cysteine and generating ammonia, then that ammonia, the side effects from that can make you feel worse maybe after a few days.
Oh, okay. You have to be careful with me here. You know I love that alternative nutritional stuff, so I'm going to have to get back on your on your
noted.
Book. I'll go off in the weeds on you. I'm sorry. It's just so interesting to me.
Yeah.
And you know, and not everybody I talk to always knows that stuff. So, well, you got about, let's see, about 7 minutes. What do you want to talk about?
Let's see. Well, first of all, I'll mention my website for my book, www.godshousecalls.com. And you can connect directly in to purchase the book through that website. It talks a lot about me and some of my experiences. Of course, you can also just simply get on Amazon.com. You know, Eva, we just released the book this last Saturday, and we ended up being number one in three different categories on Amazon, including holistic medicine was one of the categories. So we're very pleased with the launch, and I'm going to be available for doing interviews like this, for giving presentations. There's nothing I love more, as you can probably discern, than giving presentations and being in front of an audience. You know, I'd like to talk with churches. I'd like really to talk with corporations because, you know, part of the message of this book is that, yeah, I think it really does matter how we live our lives. That's one of the net effects of these stories is that, you know, we have a mission here on Earth that we're supposed to fulfill and that we need to figure out in a hurry what that mission is and go for it. And one of the other messages of this book is, you know, we don't need to be afraid of death. If we're making the world a better place, if, you know, on a day-to-day basis, if we're trying to make others' lives better, then I think we can feel comfortable, you know, that when we die that we're going to, and forgiveness, again, an important thing. We have to completely forgive ourselves and others. But if we're doing those things, that we don't need to be fearful of death and how that changes our life. You know, our cortisol levels are going to be a lot lower if we don't have that fear. And we're going to live longer and we'll be more effective in everything we do. We've got to get out of that fight or flight, you know, catabolic mode and get into the zen-like parasympathetic mode. That's the healing, the regenerative mode where we can be most effective. And there are lots of ways, you know, to do that. You know, meditation is important for that. And, you know, some people have that COMT gene. I'm sorry if we're getting off on that methylation. But, you know, getting that COMT gene addressed. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're a real energetic, anxious individual, then you probably have the COMT mutation where you're not getting rid of norepinephrine and dopamine readily. So when the door closes suddenly, you're going to startle. When you wake up with a negative thought in the middle of the night, you're going to be awake for an hour. If you know you drink caffeine, you're going to get more hyped up than other individuals would. When the phone rings, you don't just hear it, you feel it. It doesn't feel good, right? And those individuals also have dopamine that fluctuates, and therefore they tend to be moodier. They have more seasonal affective disorder. And because they don't get rid of estrogen as readily, they're estrogen dominant, so more fibrocystic breasts and ovarian cysts and so forth, and more autoimmune symptoms because estrogen promotes autoimmune activity. So these individuals have more bloating, flatulence, brain fog, you know, aches and pains in joints and muscles, right? And so recognizing that, magnesium is one of the things that helps address that. You know, I use a lot of natural lithium. Lithium orotate is helpful in the right circumstance, and then, you know, sometimes methylation, when you know, roll out a CBS scenario with SAMe, can be real helpful. So, you know, recognizing and dealing with that, and so learn about COMT if you've got those symptoms and get that addressed.
That's a big one. So many people have that one, too, you know.
Absolutely. Half of the world has that.
Yeah, and that's a big one. And they don't know about that one. Everybody knows MTHFR, but not everybody knows COMT.
Absolutely. And it's,
everybody,
you know,
listen to him here.
Write a book seriously on COMT one of these days because, you know, it's such an important one. And, it, you know, I call it the genius gene because, you know, in males, because they don't get rid of dopamine, that promotes growth of their prefrontal cortex and they're smarter. But in females, because of that extra estrogen, that promotes anxiety and panic and OCD and so forth. So they're in the constant fight-or-flight catabolic state, and that inhibits, counteracts the benefit of the dopamine. So if we can get those individuals into that zen-like state, then the dopamine can make them a lot smarter. So
is the problem that they're that they can't get rid of is it because they don't have dopamine to utilize, or they have
So when the dopamine is released, they can't metabolize it, so it hangs around longer than normal, which, you know, can be a good thing by promoting prefrontal cortex growth, but because of that norepinephrine, which increases fight or flight, that neutralizes the benefit of the dopamine. So if we can get that norepinephrine effect under control, that estrogen dominance under control, then you can get that full benefit of dopamine and become smarter.
Interesting. Jim, I want you to come back soon and talk about that. I could listen for another hour on just
sure.
that.
No, we certainly can. I might need to write the book first so we can get out. But, yeah, I'm seriously considering. You know, if you Google COMT, I'm the number two thing that pops up.
So didn't you used to be with SpectraCell? I want people to know that.
Oh, I still am. Right. I'm a national consultant with SpectraCell Labs. We do micronutrient testing, look at every single vitamin, six minerals, key amino acids, and nutrients inside cells. And, you know, I've spoken around the country on behalf of SpectraCell. And I've loved that. That's given me a terrific opportunity to meet practitioners. And
I love SpectraCell. In fact, I got some of their tests myself 2 weeks ago. I love them. I think they're great.
Absolutely.
If anybody needs micronutrient testing, what else they do? Neurotransmitter testing?
You know, food sensitivity testing is huge. So in my practice, you know, food sensitivity is maybe the most important thing. Number two thing is hormone imbalance. You know, 80% of my patients have too much estrogen, not enough testosterone. And we've got to get that balance back, because that estrogen makes you anxious. That promotes autoimmune activity, inflammation. Testosterone dampens that. But you got to protect it from going to dihydrotestosterone. That's melpattern hair loss and hair growth in inappropriate places, and complexion issues, bossiness, aggressiveness, quick retorts. So that balancing is so key to dealing with it. Now, some people just don't have enough hormones at all because of, you know, burning the candle at both ends. So sometimes it's deficiency. But then Lyme disease is the other thing. So much Lyme disease out there that we treat. But those are the three big things. But, yeah, in our patients, we do SpectraCell testing. We look at food sensitivity assessment. We look at heavy metal levels. You know, we look at hormone levels. Estrone sulfate is really important, assessing whether you have excess estrogen or not. So estrone sulfate. And then we do look at the genetics, you know, to look at methylation and detoxification. And that's going to be huge, as you know, for the future.
Mm-hmm. I really think so. I think it's going to change everything. I think it's
going to
change
the
way personal injury cases are litigated by lawyers.
Yeah.
I think it's everything. I just think it's everything. Anyway, one more time, where can we find you, Jim?
Yeah, so first of all, Eva, I do have my Extraordinary Practice Conference, and the website for that is www.drroach.net, drroach.net. And, you know, on that website is a quote from Jack Canfield, who, you know, claims that my brain belongs in the Smithsonian if and when I ever die. He calls me a Wikipedia of integrative health, which he's very generous in terms of his compliments. But I appreciate that. And he says, you know, I can't say enough about the good things that you're doing.
Well, I feel the same way, Jim. You know that. How many times have I had you on my show now? There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Because I think you're great. Well, listen, kudos on your wonderful new book.
Okay.
Many compliments on I'll give you time on what you do for humanity with your holistic medical skills too. Thank you.
Yeah, right. And people can catch me on Facebook. I'm on Facebook now, and my regular website is themidwaycenter.com, themidwaycenter.com. So, great.
All right. Thank you, and I'm going to call you soon, maybe tomorrow or the next day, and schedule you to come back to talk about methylation.
Absolutely.
Have a great one, Jim, and congratulations on your new book.
Sure. Okay.
Good night.